Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire, and this is the official Lions podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, this is our last regular season episode. Now, far from our last episode, God willing, we have many more after this. But the Lions finished their descent, and they will land and end their season against Green Bay on Sunday at Ford Field.
Yes.
Currently, the team sits at 3-11-1. We are not pleased with that record. It was probably a little bit unexpected. Well, especially by you, as you were on record giving them a record at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. I mean, when the wheels came off, it came off, right?
They did. So you know, you got to give them credit for that. You know, that they didn't just lose one wheel and they were kind of just poking along. They all came off.
No, the whole chassis.
They stayed off.
Yeah, the underbelly is scraping. The wheels are gone. The axles are broke. Yeah. It's a mess.
And we're already confusing our listenership because we're using two different metaphors. I was using a flight one. You were using a car one. I got in on that too, though. We'll leave it. We aren't perfect. All right, so they lost 27-17 against the Broncos on Sunday. We're not going to talk a ton about that game, but let's first talk about the injury report. This will be the last time we talk about the injury report for the season. First off, defensive tackle A'shaun Robinson has a shoulder, and he did not participate in practice on Christmas Day.
Yeah, well, and it's all estimates, right? Yeah, they sent out the estimate injury report at like 9 a.m. They were like, yeah, we didn't practice, but if we did, this is what we think would have happened, right? But the fact that they would have expected him not to have been available on Wednesday is not super encouraging. We haven't seen Thursdays yet. We're recording this ahead of that, practice. So we'll see if he gets upgraded, but if he stays as a do not practice, on Thursday and then gets ruled out on Friday, this is a scenario where they might as well just IR him and promote a practice squad guy because it doesn't do him any harm from a roster standpoint, and it allows you to get ahead of the contracts in the offseason. So we'll get into that a little bit more as we get further down the road, but A'shaun is another candidate for IR here.
So could the same be true with right tackle Rick Wagner?
100%. Yep. Yeah. Both of those guys are very vulnerable to just keeping them out and just saying it is what it is at this point. Free up two more roster spots, which we'll talk about how they even have one available currently. It just seems like they're going to add some more players here in the next few days.
All right, Jack linebacker Devin Kennard, he's limited with a hamstring injury. He probably will play on Sunday.
Yeah, he played a ton because of the injuries up front, specifically on the defensive line. So that looks more like it would have been like a rest type period. I expect him to be limited most of the week. I expect him to play. I don't think it'd be an issue with him for the Green Bay game. He should be available.
Kennard played 64 of the available 71 snaps on defense, so 90% of the defensive plays. Left tackle Taylor Decker, ankle injury. He was limited in practice, or in the fake practice, he was limited.
Yeah. Gotta remember, he left the game for two snaps, and then switched possessions, and then when they came back out on the offense came back out on the field, he was back out with them again. So those two snaps that he left for was the ankle, and it created an interesting scenario because you had Rick Wagner out and Tyrell Crosby starting at right tackle, and then when Decker went out, Crosby's the only guy that's available to play left tackle. So now you have to shift Crosby over to left tackle. And Dan Skipper became the right tackle because he can only play right tackle. He really can't play left tackle in the NFL. And so you saw Crosby's versatility and why the Lions like him so much as a third offensive tackle. Why they didn't move him into guard, I don't know if they necessarily believe he's going to be like the future starting right tackle, but they love his versatility as a swing tackle, and he's very reliable and he does a decent job with that. So I think they like the role that he's in there, and he showed it on against the Broncos.
All right, safety Tavon Wilson with a hamstring. He was playing rather good on Sunday.
Yeah, and I think he has been.
Rather well.
Yeah, rather well for a while, right? You know, a lot is made of Quandre getting traded and that being a unpopular move.
Well, especially after what happened when he got traded.
Right.
How well he played. Right. Well, he played in Seattle until he got hurt.
And but the underrated or the underlying storyline there is how Tavon has stepped up. And you got to remember, Tavon was a guy who took a pay cut to stay in Detroit. He's on an expiring contract. He's played very well with his opportunities since Quandre has left. And in my opinion, I think he has earned himself a contract. I think he will be one of the top five players on this team that they'll try and re-sign. He was limited, but again, I think that's just kind of rest-related. But I think he deserves some more credit than he's gotten. I've been impressed with him the back half of this season.
All right, finally, defensive tackle Damon Snacks Harrison, kneecap. He was a full participant in the fake practice.
Yeah, he probably won't play practice today, and then he'll be limited, and then he'll be fine, and he'll play. It's a standard veteran schedule for him.
All right, two more guys moved to injured reserve, Christian Jones and Jelani Tavai.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that? Do you want to squeeze that in there now, talking about how the roster works? And I know you mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, why they're stuffing all these guys on injured reserve. It just opens up more active roster spots for younger players that were on the practice squad, and now they'll be eligible to be exclusive rights free agents. I might be bungling that all up. Go ahead.
So the basic concept is the teams are allowed to maintain a 53-man roster, but players on injured reserve do not count against that 53-man roster. Practice squad players don't count against the 53-man roster either, but when your season is over, your practice squad players become free agents. So what the league does is the league offers the ability to offer what's called the futures deal. And that futures deal can be offered to players to meet the same eligibility requirements as they do to get on the practice squad, or for the most part. And they can offer them a futures contract, which pays them like a regular season contract, but it doesn't count against the 53-man roster. So what the Lions will be doing here is they will have their standard 53-man roster that they go into the Green Bay game with. And then they have a whole bunch of people that are on injured reserve that they have to pay but don't count against the 53. They'll have some futures contracts that they have to pay but don't count against the 53. And they'll maintain this roster going into the offseason. If they want to sign a free agent player who's not eligible for a futures contract, they would have to cut a player that's on their 53-man roster in order to do so. This roster with injured reserve, futures, and 53 carries with them all the way through March until you hit free agency. And then when free agency opens, the roster expands from 53 to 90. All the futures contracts become regular contracts, and all the players on injured reserve come off injured reserve and go back onto your roster. So what you will have is, right now the Lions have 15 players on injured reserve. So and 53 on their regular roster. So all those injured reserve players will just jump right back on the roster, and that puts them right up to 68. Now, let's say you sign 10 futures deals. Well, now that puts you up to 78, and now you've got 12 picks remaining. So they might not sign 12 futures guys. They may only sign like 6, depending on what they want to have available and going into free agency. But this is a way for them to kind of get ahead of free agency, right? This is like free agency in January, essentially, is what this is. So by adding Tavai onto injured reserve here, they actually have an open spot on the 53, meaning they can promote someone. If they add Ashawn Robinson and Rick Wagner, that'll open 2 more spots up. They can promote a couple more guys. And that just gets them onto the 53-man roster, meaning they don't have to hope they can sign them to a futures deal. They can lock them into their offseason program, and they will hold them as working towards their 90-man roster that will open up in March. And then that, you know, leads you into you've got the draft and undrafted free agents, and you're adding in March, you're adding your other unrestricted free agents. And so there's a whole slew of things that can happen. You've got restricted free agents that you're working towards getting under contracts as well. The Lions have, I think, like 8 of those guys. And so there's it gets a little bit complicated, but basically what you're doing now is you're taking advantage of the system to get younger guys on your roster, which will be a 90-man roster down the road, by kind of utilizing these off-season rules that the NFL allows. So like a team like that's in the playoffs, they are not going to sign, they can't sign futures deals until they're out of the playoffs. So it allows the teams out of the playoffs first to sign guys, and they kind of get first choice, kind of like with the draft, right? You get first choice at whoever's there. And this is one little advantage that you get being a team that's not
a terrible team.
Yeah. So that's the basic kind of roster construction. That's why if a guy's not going to play and you know he's not going to play and he's injured and you can utilize injured reserve to kind of get him off the 53, it just gives you more opportunities to add younger guys. And again, you're paying them to keep them on the roster to get them into workouts, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be on the team, you know, come August in training camp, or even much less September and when the regular season starts again. But it just gives you opportunities, I guess.
All right, did you want to mention Jones or Tavai's injury? I don't think either of them were long-term ones. They're just weren't going to play in the last week, and by then, just for all the reasons you explained there, they put him on IR.
Yeah, Jones was actually ahead of last week's game, which gave him the opportunity.
Yeah, he didn't play in week 16.
Yeah, that gave them the opportunity to promote Jonathan Wynn, the defensive end, from the practice squad to the active roster. They needed him. They used him like on 10% of the snaps, I think, or something like that, because their defensive line is pretty depleted right now. Now with Tavai leaving, you now have your top three linebackers all on injured reserve. So you've got Jalen Reeves-Maben as your number one, Steve Longa as your number two. Then it's Kabinda is your number three.
Yeah, it's a lovable group.
And but you're probably going to need another guy because you got Miles Killebrew in that mix, but I wouldn't be surprised from just a special team standpoint to see one of their other linebackers on the practice squad promoted to give them bodies, I guess, in all three phases. That means either could be local Wayne State product, Anthony Pittman, who they've put on and off the practice squad for a while now.
See a security guard at Ford Field in his spare time.
No.
We'll avoid that this go around.
Or it could be Christian Sam, who was a player I really liked in the 2018 draft, who was selected by the Patriots
Doesn't sound like the Lions I know.
But shockingly, he went to Tennessee.
He played for like 10 teams, right?
No, he went to Tennessee and then he went to Miami, which is, again, same systems. Yeah. But he's a guy that I liked before the Patriots drafted, because when I evaluated his film coming out of Arizona State, I said, this is a guy who's going to fit the Lions scheme. I liked him then. I liked him now. I wouldn't mind seeing him get promoted either. But I do think either Pittman or Sam will probably find their way onto this 53-man roster, just because they're going to need a body type like that.
All right, moving on to the roster moves. The big one was the Kerryon Johnson being activated. You mentioned that in your one-man show last week. We get a chance to take a look at the backfield of Bo Scarborough and Kerryon Johnson. Yeah. So that's likely what the backfield will be next year. We'll see that 1-2 punch. Maybe not. Maybe they add somebody in the draft or free agency, but I think they kind of did this so they could see what it would look like.
Yeah, I think we got a nice little taste of what they might do. Now, Ty Johnson's also... So let me back up. Kerryon's under his rookie contract. Bo Scarborough is signed through 2020. Ty Johnson's on his rookie contract. J.D. McKissic is a restricted free agent who I believe will probably, they'll pony up to pay him, I believe.
As long as he can still run, bring him back.
And
he's good as a gadget player.
And Wes Hills is an exclusive rights free agent. Now, Wes Hills being an exclusive rights free agent is going to cost pennies to bring back. So there's absolutely no reason not to bring him back, because it will cost you less to bring Wes Hills back as a exclusive rights free agent than it will to sign another running back on someone else's practice squad to a futures free agent. And if you're talking about running back five, and you're talking about a guy who could, who's going to play cheap, who has some upside, I definitely think they're going to. It's almost a no brainer to bring Wes Hills back, because it's literally going to be like half a million or like a little over $500,000, and there's going to be no signing bonuses on that. So there's no cap hits if you decide to move on from him. So there's really no downside whenever you see an exclusive rights tag on somebody. So yeah, I think that five is probably going to be the five you're going to see in camp. That, like you said, they might add one guy to bring them up to six for the offseason. But yeah, I think the Scarborough, Kerryon Johnson 1-2 punch makes sense. I think what we saw with Scarborough being kind of the heavy and then Kerryon being the follow-up is what they want, even though Kerryon is a much more accomplished and a much higher ceiling back than Scarborough. They want the hammer out there first, and then they want to be able to bring on the other guys, and I think Bo brings them that. Now, if they're worried about Bo's injury history and they don't think Wes Hills is the answer, maybe they're looking for a power back in this class. Or if they don't believe in, if they think Kerryon's got a injury history, then maybe they're looking for another Kerryon type to add to that that backfield. But it's in my opinion, they showed us a glimpse of what they want. Now you add in a healthy offensive line, you add in a healthy Matthew Stafford, they should be able to perform better than they did against Denver.
All right, they promoted defensive end Jonathan Wynn, and that was. Did he play?
Yeah, he played like 10% of the snaps, actually. Just because they were down so many bodies on that defensive line. Because you lost Frank Heron. You've lost Hand. Robinson wasn't available. Daniels is on IR. Hand is on IR. Like, they didn't have anybody. And Madeir, who they signed last week, was inactive. So they needed big bodies out there.
And finally, they signed safety A.J. Howard to the practice squad.
Yeah, this is a guy who, again, people are going to see that he had a cup of coffee with the Patriots, and they're going to think, oh, blah, 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 this is a Patriots thing. Right? He was drafted, or he was undrafted, signed with Cleveland, I think, or something like that, and then he bounced around to a couple other teams. Then he was with the New England Patriots for last year's offseason. And then he went to two other teams, and now he's with Detroit. So it's not like this is a guy who has any connection to Patricia. But what he has is he has a skill set that where he can play as a free safety, a strong safety, and a slot safety, which is the three positions that the Lions utilize. So he gives them some flexibility. He's a guy that will probably get a futures deal. If the Lions are signing someone to the practice squad right now, that's them saying, hey, I'm probably going to give you a futures deal, or at least you have the last 2 weeks of the regular season here to prove to me that you can get a futures deal in here. So that's really what A.J. Howard is. He's a young guy who can play multiple roles, but is he better than C.J. Moore? Probably not, you know what I mean? Or they probably would have signed him to the active roster.
All right, so now is the portion of the podcast where we would normally do a recap of the previous week's game. I guess we'll do it real quickly. I will say this. Lions looked good at the beginning. Jumped out to a 10-0 lead.
Yeah, kick return.
Yep. Then
a punt return.
There was a punt return by Jamal Agnew. Then quickly hemorrhaged the lead back and were tied going into halftime. And then stunk in the second half and lost 27-17. Really not much to say more about that.
Yeah.
Kenny Golladay was their best player on offense.
Yeah.
Which is not surprising. Blau was meh. The running game, meh.
The running game was, again, okay. Right?
Four yards per carry, but they didn't hammer the ball a lot. Only 90 yards rushing, 21 carries. So,
Again, you get a healthier offensive line and a quarterback that can throw and play action, and that 90 could be 150. You know what I mean? But yeah, that's about the fact that they got up to 90 was, I thought, fine. Considering what's going on around them.
What is not fine is defensively, although they've been playing a lot better against the run. They did hemorrhage, although you do mention about the health of the defensive line wasn't really up to snuff. They gave up a ton of yards on the ground, 5.7 yards per carry to Philip Lindsay, who had 109 on the ground, 137, 147, 150 yards total on the ground to the Broncos. Well, although they didn't give up a ton of passing yards, under 200 to Drew Lock and company.
What you had is a speed running back against a defensive line that was playing their two nose tackles over 60% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they didn't have a defensive lineman that they could utilize other than they started expanding Flowers a little bit. But you can't play Flowers everywhere. That's just, it just doesn't work. And you were weak, and they were hitting the weaknesses. And so it's, again, not, it was expected.
Yeah, no, and we're sitting in the state. We sit and watch the games, and you're like, well, you know, I've rooted for this team. You know, me personally, rooting for the team my whole life, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who are listening there that are just like me, and they watch it and say, you want to see them win.
Yeah.
You're sitting around, you're like, man, I wish this team would win this game, but then, you know, then there's the fans who are like, well, no, you'd rather see them lose for a draft pick, and you know, but. We saw this coming. They, you know, they're bad, and yeah, they're IRing all their players, and that's you know, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, they're prepping for 2020. I think the where I have settled in for the last month is they don't have the talent with the players they have available to win, but I still want them to win. You know, you still want to see them do well. You still want to see them succeed. But at no point in the last month, I don't think I've ever sat at a game and been like, uh-oh, they got a chance. And I mean, maybe once or twice, but it just, even when you were up 10, you're like, it's just, it's going to come back. Like, it's just unfortunate. They just don't have the horses to play for 60 minutes and get it done. So, yeah, it's an unfortunate state of a roster right now, but it is what it is. When you're eliminated by Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
This is the product you put out on the field, unfortunately, and like it or not, maybe they didn't need to IR all these guys, and maybe they could have put more talent out there, but this is how the NFL works. When you're out, you start working towards 2020. And this idea that they're tanking, I just want to say this.
Oh boy.
They're not tanking. They're still trying. And the players that are out there are still trying to win, and the coaching staff is still trying to win. And the front office still wants them to win. But at the same time, they are preparing for next year. And so...
It's still a tank.
I don't think they're purposefully saying, I want a high pick, and so we're going to
purposefully... I don't know. They're purposely putting all these guys on IR.
But like, I don't...
They're not trying to lose these games. Just yes. Like... because you could argue that NBA teams are trying... Because that's the most famous sport for tanking, is yes. In the NBA.
Yes.
And so there could be a lot of cases made in those games that, yes, those teams are doing whatever it takes to not win.
Right.
Like, that has been a discussion that has been going on in the NBA for the last few years. Now, it's a different... I would, you know, like, it's semantics to needle at all these details. I would argue the Lions are tanking. They're not trying to. No, I understand they're not trying to lose because all these players and all these coaches need new jobs eventually. Mm-hmm. If they stay, they either with the Lions, they get to stay with the Lions, or they are released from the Lions or they become free agents, so they go somewhere else. And so they're not going to try to lose. It's just that the team, the front office, really is putting the team in position where they can't win, and that's it. And I don't know why there's. You're going to want to come back in an argument with me.
No.
But like, that's just what it is. That's just what they're doing, it seems.
I just think when the word tanking has such a negative.
You're too focused on the word.
No, well, that words are my life right now, right? And so, for me, I don't like. I think it has the idea that they're purposefully trying to lose, and so I wish there was a better word that would create, you know, a better clarity for this. Because when people hear tanking, I think people think they're purposefully trying to lose. And both of us agree they're not. So
yeah, no, they're not. But, like, that's just the situation they've been put in.
Yeah.
What they're going to lose.
We'll have to come up with a different word then, I guess.
All right. Well, you work on that. That's your assignment for next week, to come up with a new word, and hopefully we can perpetuate it across the entire NFL. All right, so you had your one-man manifesto last week.
Oh, yeah.
So I was not here for that. I apologize. I was busy with some other things. Yeah, yeah, no, work
you
gets...
You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, no, work gets in the way, and, you know, I need to get paid.
Yes.
And so... You talked about Matt Patricia coming back. You wanted me to talk about it real quick.
Correct.
In the same way. You know, a few weeks back, you know, I'm not a Matt Patricia fan. You know, I do not like the way he prepares his defense for games or adjusts in-game with his defense. I can't hold what's happening now against him because, yeah, he doesn't have his – everybody's getting put on IR. So, like, I'm really not evaluating him over the last few games. There's really no need for that. It seems that – they spent a lot of actual capital investing in his defense, and with limited returns, Flowers is playing a lot better than he initially played, and a lot of that can be attributed to his injury coming into the season. Most of the defense has been through trades and free agent acquisitions, and they've been, Justin Coleman at times is good, other times he's hemorrhaging passing yardage to other teams' players. Melvin, he is developing. If it's him or whoever, his coaching staff have been developing Tracy Walker well. Obviously, the jury's still out at Jared Davis, but it looks rather negative that the future's going to be rather negative with him. Jelani Tavai, once again, yeah, who knows, but he's been hurt. Something that's been working against him is the lack of development in A'shaun Robinson and Deshaun Hand, who have looked like they could be very good players, but have too much of an injury history at this point to really blossom one way or the other. Hand especially, because Hand missed almost the whole year, you know, and it was going to be really interesting to see what he was going to be able to do.
Yeah.
And Snacks was a good acquisition last year and really improved the run defense, but even to his own admission, like due to his not being at training camp, it really suffered for the entire season. And the Mike Daniels pick wouldn't say it was a disaster, because at the time people were coming into the season like, hey, this team might be pretty good, and they just added this guy Mike Daniels, and, you know, nobody knew he was really as hurt as he was.
Right.
One positive you could say about him is when Quinn sat him down, and I'm guessing what happened is Quinn sat him down and said, hey, we're going to bring you in an offensive coordinator, and it's going to be this Daryl Bevel guy. Do you think you could work with him? And he said, yes. You know, that was a positive. because the offense made a bit of a turnaround until Stafford really got put away, and he did the best he could for as many weeks as he could with Blau and with Jeff Driscoll. All that being said, ultimately I don't think Patricia should be retained, except for the fact that, hey, I'm not too upset that they're keeping him, because, hey, anything can happen. I'm going to try to be positive about this, and I know everybody points at San Francisco. Well, look at San Francisco. Look at San Francisco.
Sure.
Look at San Francisco. They had two crummy years, and now they're, you know, one of the big Super Bowl contenders. And is that possible for the Lions? Well, everybody, you know, if you look at the reviews, they say I'm the classic Lions pessimist. So, yeah, I would say no, it's not. That's not what's going to happen next year. But I'm fine with giving him one last opportunity at that. I'll be very upset if he goes 7-9 and 8-8 or 8-8, and they're like, we're keeping him. We've got an improvement, mm-hmm. You know, because it's. But at the same time, we'll have to look at the construction of the roster, and is it good or is it bad? You know, is this team any good or is this bad? Are we moving forward or not? And I don't know. So I have really mixed feelings about this. I guess I don't have mixed feelings about it, because he probably should have been removed, but I'm not that upset that they kept them, because, well, give them one more shot. What's it going to hurt?
Just
our hearts.
Yeah.
But they've already been leveled over time.
Just to kind of recap my thoughts from last week was, basically, I understand the concept of wanting to keep him because there's... I'm a believer in not rocking the boat unless you have to. And... but then, as I said last week, there's times when I look at him and decisions that he's making, and I just don't understand them, and I think he doesn't have what it takes. And then there's times when I watch what he does, and I say, okay, there's potential there, and I think there's a future for him. But it's a tough decision, and I think most fans are probably in line with what you said there, and that there's no right or wrong way to feel about this. I think there's going to be these mixed feelings.
If you're extremely upset, I totally get it. And if you're like, no, I think he could still be good.
I get that too.
We are in a sad state of the franchise. Listen to us talk. And in a minute, we're going to talk about the game coming up against the Packers. And, you know, you're looking down at the sheet, you look at the standings, the Packers are 12-3. Mm-hmm. And we're 3-11-1. And last year, no, 3-11-1. It will be 3-12-1 on Sunday. Last year, the Lions were 6-10. The Packers were 6-9-1. Look at the two directions the teams have gone in that time. And over just, you know, the last... 20 years alone, more than that, the last 30 years, when you look at just these two teams, for example, like when the Packers have a down year, they often bounce back, and all of a sudden in here, they're going to have 7 more wins this year than they did last year, and it's the coach's first year. Now they're in a different situation than the Lions. It's just real disheartening. It's tough to be a fan of it's tough and it's not tough to be a fan of this team because, you know, I've always been a fan of this team, and I don't see that changing. But yeah, it's tough rooting for them when they can't ever get it done.
I think the Packers have laid a little bit of a blueprint out here for if you need to win now, how you can do it. And this is a team in the Lions.
The two best pass rushers on the market. Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention that about Patricia, too, how he abandoned the idea of blitzing the passer until it was too late. But go ahead.
That's always been his concept, though, right?
I know, but it didn't work for how many weeks. We've argued about this before. Go back to what you were saying.
No, you said it. You go get get players. They were aggressive in free agency, and they got two players that could...
Which is not normal for the Packers, traditionally.
Yeah. Correct. And it's not normal for the Lions either, but I would love to see the Lions be aggressive and go get a top pass rusher who they can start over Devin Kennard and opposite of Trey Flowers, and then be able to add another... Or maybe you add a big defensive lineman or something, right? It's not historically been the Lions' approach or Bob Quinn's approach to aggressively attack free agency. He goes after one guy and then he gets a couple other filler guys, and then he's planning for the future. The Packers showed you how to turn it around quick. Be aggressive in the right areas. And I think the Lions have a couple of very obvious areas where they're going to need help. Pass rusher. They either need to bring Graham Glasgow back or replace him, and potentially upgrade Melvin.
Well, interesting you say need, because that's not necessarily... It might be a need that they would have to replace him, because he'll just leave on his own.
Well, I would like to see them try and get him back, get Graham back, because he's so versatile and he does so much for this team. I think he's worth the money. I think he'll be their number one player to try and retain. But... If you can be aggressive in free agency and on the defensive side of the ball, there's a potential to have a quick turnaround. Because as bad as this defense looks, you can fix it in a couple of pieces. And that's... I know it sounds strange, but there's a lot of talent, and you need... But there is. There's talent.
Sorry if I'm smiling. You're the eternal optimist.
But there is. There's also very obvious key holes. And if you want to have a turnaround, you know, you said to yourself, you point to San Francisco about...
I know, but everybody's been pointing to... It's one...
Sure.
One
example. You could talk about... there's some other coaches out there, history-wise, that you can say in their third season there's a turnaround. So maybe you put this in place where you're hoping for a turnaround. But you also have to... you can't just be content with that. You can't just hope you turn into San Francisco.
Better.
Yeah, you have
it's not just hope. They actually have to deliver on most of that.
And you have to be aggressive. And I think if Bob Quinn is aggressive in free agency, you can see this team improve. If he's not aggressive in free agency, then I would be less optimistic, because you only have so many... you're only going to have so many shots at trying to improve this roster. For them to go from 3 three wins to eight wins, I think is very doable if they keep towing the line from what they've been doing the last 4 years, without putting much effort in, just doing what they need to do. They can go up to eight wins without an issue. But if you want to get to 10 or 12, I think you need to be aggressive. And if there's an ultimatum on the line that you need to be competitive, this is the offseason to be aggressive. So I think the Packers kind of showed you that. If you get the right guys at the right spots and you're willing to spend money, yeah, you can have a quick turnaround.
And last two things about Patricia. I don't like how his power consolidation backfired on him a little bit. And I know the whole fake it until you make it. And the whole, hey, I'm going to wear a garbage bag and have a pencil over my ear. But none of that's, all of that's neither here or
that's
there.
That's personal, though.
I know, it's personal. You want us to look like a homeless man. All right. Great. Well, so do I, but I'm not on TV every weekend.
Let's
put a pin in this because we're chewing up a lot of time. Go ahead, finish it. Yeah, give me your point.
Everybody knows the Packers.
I'm trying to cut off all your points.
Well, we don't need to talk about the Packers too much, anyway.
No, we don't.
But let me spin this, I want to segue this into another question for you: is what if he's replacing the concept is you're retaining him, but he's going to have to replace coaches.
Yeah, that should be the minimum. Like, right? He has to replace coaches, or you know, somebody has to. Sadly, now that we're retaining, like that, it's sadly for him, mm-hmm. we're retaining you and we're retaining Bob Quinn. Mm-hmm. You meaning Matt Patricia. Mm-hmm. Now you got to fire a bunch of people because this is very unacceptable. You went from 6-10 to 3-12-1, and you can make excuses about injuries all you want. The ship was sinking before everybody got hurt. You got to fire a bunch of these guys. Replacement. A lot of them are your friends, mm-hmm. your mentor. Defensive coordinators, your mentor. This is like, I want, you know, because you see this stuff happen all the time. It's like, do none of these people ever think about this? It's like, hey, you know, if this doesn't work out, I'm going to have to fire my mentor. <You know? laughs>
That's, when I logged on to the Lions Wire, the WordPress, and I could see the background, I can see projects that people are working on. I already saw this morning that Jeff Risden's already working on potential defensive coordinators.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
because I think the expectation is that Pasqualoni is going to be moved. In my opinion, because he's a mentor,
he's going to get the Gunther Cunningham role. They're going to kick him to be special assistant or whatever. He's going to have some dumb title that, you know, he's just going
to
be there.
Yeah, assistant to the regional
manager.
Yeah,
assistant to the region. secret assistant to the regional manager. Assistant to the assistant to the regional manager.
Personally, on offense, I don't think they need to do a whole lot. You might look at tight ends coach Chris White as being vulnerable. On defense, I think everybody's vulnerable on defense. I don't know if there's a...
Do you think he takes over the defense himself? Be like, you know what, we're not going to run with the defensive coordinator. I'm running this defense.
It's a good question.
This is my last stand. Basically, it's going to be done my way.
It's a good question. It's a tough question. Now, I can tell you that, in my opinion, I think you can leave Bevel alone more than I thought you could.
He probably does anyways.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. And I do think
he probably just makes calls on fourth down whether or not to go for it or whatever.
Yeah,
and if or to run a trick. But that's it. I mean, I would assume that's just the extent of what the head coach is involved with calling when he's not the offensive coach or doesn't have a hand in the offense. Like, those are probably the few things he probably has control over or would want to have control over.
I don't know if he would take over. It would depend on who becomes his defensive coordinator. Because when I started looking at the available coaches, now I haven't seen Jeff's list, so Jeff might have somebody I'm not thinking of. But when I started looking at the available coaches list, there's not a lot of guys out there
Rod
that are familiar.
That
are familiar with this scheme.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Well, that's where he might have to adapt a little bit. Right? We've talked about that before.
The one coach that jumps out to me the most is Gerard Mayo.
Well, we've heard his name already a few weeks ago as a potential replacement for Pasqualoni.
Now, Mayo is a linebackers coach in New England.
Surprise, surprise.
Actually, he's an inside linebackers coach in New England. So you could maybe promote him to all linebackers. And
sure.
Then that's a promotion for him, and maybe you can bring him over. And maybe you give him an assistant head coach title as well, and that's enough to bring him over. Or maybe you have to make him defensive coordinator. And if you make him defensive coordinator, then yes, I think Patricia's going to have a heavy hand in how things are being called. But if it's not mayo, I think we might see a variation of how involved Patricia is. But yeah, I mean, a guy like Mayo would be very interesting because he had a lot of success. He understands how to. They really need a coach in the line that can fix the linebackers, and it's not Al Golden, in my opinion. And maybe they'll retain Golden. They've used him all over, and they seem to like him. But
maybe you'll get a college head coaching chair for that season. Florida Atlantic needs a new coach. He's coached down in Florida, right?
Yeah, you coached at Miami.
Yeah, Miami. Yeah. Not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, I just don't see it with him. I just don't know. And that's my personal opinion, and I hate to name... And I said last week I wouldn't name names, but, man, I just...
Well, if he's good, he's good. And yeah.
Maybe I'm
when
wrong.
It comes to guys who have never been a coordinator before,
yeah.
What do we know? Yeah. We don't know anything yet. Yep. Nobody does. You know, like... Yes, but you could always go from the Lions corollary of, well, he's going to be terrible. You know, because he's going to be the coordinator, defensive coordinator of the Lions. But, some guys, they get this promotion and they're great. And they've been totally ready for it for a long time. And even if they're young, like, they just know what they're doing.
Well,
and
sure.
We'll see.
Look at the head coach in Miami. He, I don't like keep
Flores.
Flores, thank you.
Brian Flores.
He was an assistant position coach. Yep, no, you're right. He was an assistant coach with the Patriots for a long time. Patricia left. He becomes defensive coordinator for one season, and then he gets a head coaching job. You know what I mean? Like, so it's not out of the realm.
Well, that might be just because he was there. No, it's but like, well, he's the next guy. It's kind of, we've got to pluck from Belichick because he might have the secret sauce as well memorized, the recipe memorized.
But I mean, I guess my point was is that with Mayo, it's you've seen other coaches with less experience in this scheme get promoted faster than Mayo. So it's possible that, you know, Mayo could be on, he could be fast tracked. I don't know. I still think it's early for him to be a full on defensive coordinator, but maybe you do what the Rams did a couple years back and you have co-defensive coordinator.
Co-defensive coordinator.
Like they had co-offensive coordinators. Yep. And maybe you give him, like, the front seven and you give somebody else the... I don't know.
Spartans did that, and they did pretty well with that, but that's college. Totally different story. Yep. All right. Let's talk about the Packers. They're 12-3. I guess this the major things we'll point out. The opening line.
Yeah.
The game was 9.5 points. Now, you gave me information that after Monday Night Football, with the trouncing of the Minnesota Vikings at the hands of the Packers...
Yeah.
That line has exploded up to 14 because Packers need a win.
Yeah. The Packers...
To secure a week off and potentially home field.
Yeah.
All the way through.
They could get all the way to one. Yep. But you need some breaks.
Since it's a 1 o'clock game, they don't know if they'll have those breaks.
Correct. You've got a New Orleans team that's right in the mix there. And... did you hear the story about the New Orleans fan who offered David Blau a car if he could beat the Packers? he apparently likes
it. I like it.
So
let's incentivize it. I'm all in.
So, the Saints are right there. They want to get that top spot. Getting a bye is going to be a little bit challenging. There's three teams in the NFC right now, with San Francisco being the other one, that are all in contention for a bye, and the number one seed Packers are in that mix. So there's incentive for the Packers to definitely go out there and beat them. Now, does that incentive translate into a 5.5 point jump or whatever it is, 4.5 point jump?
Yeah, probably.
Maybe. I think this is a game that favored the Packers anyways. You know, it'll be a much different team than they faced in Green Bay for a lot of different reasons when arguably the Lions won that game. But we're going to see a healthy Green Bay versus a not healthy Lions, and Packers with everything to play for and the Lions everything to lose for, right? Because if you lose, now you're in the hunt for the chase for Chase, right?
Yeah, and we'll talk about that first in a second. Over under 41.5. The referee for the game is Sean Hockley. The game, of course, we mentioned before, the game is at Ford Field. It's going to be on Fox. We got Kenny Albert, Charles Davis, and Pam Oliver. So that's the number two team.
Yeah.
We get number very humorously, Dallas might not be playing for anything, yet they'll have Joe Buck and Troy Aikman at their game, even though it might already be decided by the Eagles before then. Last game we mentioned, Packers beat up on the Vikings. Really don't have to talk about this team at all. We all know they have Aaron Rodgers. We all know Aaron Jones was a nice pickup for your fantasy team if you got him in a third, fourth round, because he's been very good this year.
Yeah.
They have a decent offensive line. Decent to good. You'll be hearing the Smith brothers' names, although they're not brothers. Preston Smith and Zadarius Smith. You'll probably see some Kenny Clark. They love talking about nose tackles. And they have a young defensive backfield that looks like it might be getting a little bit better. And I don't know, that's about it. I don't know if you want to mention anything else. We saw them play before. Eric's still mad about the game. Yeah. So, I don't know. There's not really much to mention about this. So do you want to make a prediction for the game? I'll let you go first. I should note that I am trouncing you. I'm now up 11 to 11. Wait.
No, it's 3.
10-3-2.
Yes. Yes. You 10. 10 wins.
So I'll give you first crack at this one to pull within 6 games.
I have no gut feeling on this game. I think it could be like a 28-14. I think.
Well, then go. Just said it.
There you go. 28-14. I think the Lions will try. I don't think they'll have the juice. The Packers will get ahead and then they'll just sit. And then the Lions. I think everybody's figured out who David Blau is right now. And
he's third. He might not even be a third string quarterback.
Yeah,
he had a good first game, and then they watch some video on the guy. It's like, all right, well, this is how we're gonna.
And you're missing. You're on your backup right tackle. You're on your third left guard. Like, it's just the offensive line's gonna have a hard time holding up against these guys. It's a lot. Everything seems to just favor the Packers.
All right. I'm not going to go prices right on you. I'm going to go against type. I think some wacky things are going to happen, and I think the Packers are going to win 24-21.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I want to give you a shot here. I don't want to say the Packers are going to win by 20 or 12 or anything. Like, let's say it's a close, like, because this is the Lions, too. They're capable of anything.
Sure.
So let's go 20 to 12.
So let me.
Not 20 to 12. 24-21. Sorry.
So let's add this in for the people who are pulling for. Let's say the Lions pull this one out.
Oh, boy.
If they do.
Worst they can do.
They're still going to pick in the top five.
Yes.
Okay, so look, they're going to have a top
currently
five.
They're number 3.
Yep.
With a chance of getting to 2, they can't get to 1.
And they will only drop as far as 5. And even dropping as far as 5 is still going to put them in fine spots.
And I was going to mention, because everybody wants to play for Chase Young. Yeah. Chase Young's going to be the big name. It looks like the Bengals would take Joe Burrow. It would mm-hmm. make a lot of sense for them, because he's not a local Cincinnatian, but he's local to Ohio. So it would be, they're going to have that angle they'll be portraying with all of it. And they need a quarterback. But then everybody seems to be in agreement. At this point, things can happen over the next few weeks and months, that Chase Young is the best player in the draft. And he... Yeah. I don't know if they're saying he's a generational talent. I don't know. I don't know if we've gone that far with him yet. And so
you've heard it, but we've talked about this before. He's as good as the Bosa's, but people are saying he's better. I don't know if I'm ready to say he's better. But if you're going to get a guy like Bosa, that's a great addition. You know what I mean? Being able to add a Bosa level player is. I mean, you look what they've done. On the teams, on their respective teams, right? So the trick will be Washington, right?
Yeah, and they're likely not going to win. They're playing the Eagles, right?
Yes.
And the Eagles have a lot to play for because they still have a chance to win the division.
And Washington is without their quarterback. Haskins is not playing in this game.
Yeah, but they have Case Keenum. They at least have a professional quarterback playing in his place.
Right. So, but then let's, if we assume Washington loses... The common law says you should see Washington take Chase Young, but...
You would think, but anything could happen.
But they really, really need an offensive tackle.
And there's a good one near the top of the draft.
There's a few of them. So you could see Washington, we've seen this before.
Yeah.
This is the
clear. Well, we don't know anything yet. Yeah. It'll start becoming clearer the closer we get to the draft.
I mean, we've seen scenarios where this is the best player in the draft, and then he's available at 3 because the teams ahead of him pick for need. You know what I mean? Or you know, you could see teams trade up into two to try and get Chase as well. If the Lions are sitting at three, I could see the Lions going defensive tackle. I could see them going offensive tackle. I could see them trading back. I think they would be the team that would be most likely to trade back of the three. So there's going to be all kinds of scenarios we'll be able to talk about. But the main thing you need to know is if Washington loses, the number two spot is gone. If Detroit loses, they're in three. If Washington wins and Detroit loses, Detroit moves up to two. If Detroit wins, they can't drop any further than five. Oh. The teams you're worried about are the Giants in Miami, who are in the two spots behind Detroit at 4 and 5. They won't get even with Arizona, who's in the sixth spot. That's it. There's a top five.
The Lions pick have beaten the Giants, so that could.
It doesn't matter actually in draft pick. It does for playoffs.
Oh, it does.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
And for playoff scenario,
because they're third. Yeah.
Yeah, in playoff scenario, it goes by head to head, but in the draft, it's based on strength of schedule. And the Lions have a more difficult strength of schedule than both the Giants and Miami. And because they have because the Giants are, if they end up even with the Giants in Miami,
yeah, that would require ties by both of them, right?
No. It would require ties. Yes, you're right. If they tie or if they lose and Detroit wins, then it becomes this all. It gets a little more complex.
Lions are likely picking third.
Yeah,
that's probably their.
Yeah, you lose, you pick third, second or third. And you're watching that Washington game, hoping for a miracle. I guess.
And there's an Ohio State cornerback. There's a
we have
a Georgia offensive tackle. There's gonna be an
Iowa offensive tackle, an Alabama offensive tackle. You got Auburn defensive tackle. You got a South Carolina defensive tackle. You got an Iowa.
Oh, I love the Auburn defensive tackle, Brown. I've liked him for a long, long time.
Yeah,
his whole career almost. I don't know why. He's fast. You know, he's so big and fast.
He's like Sean Rodgers.
Yeah. Oh, and I like Sean Rodgers, even though he's too lazy.
That's why I'm saying you like him. he's like a non-lazy Sean Rodgers.
Well, that's positive.
There you go.
All right, so teams in line to coach the Senior Bowl because Washington blew out all their coaches during the year,
yeah.
So they won't be able to coach the Senior Bowl. The Lions likely will be able to, especially if they lose on Sunday.
And since,
obviously, they have to stay in the three spot.
Since he hired their coach last year, with Detroit retaining, Detroit becomes the other coach. They seem pretty excited to coach if they can. Now, it's a huge opportunity because you get up close look at these guys that you don't normally get. So that Senior Bowl will be at the end of January, January 25th. If they stay in that three spot, expect them to be coaching and have their whole staff settled and in place ready for that Senior Bowl.
All right, so we're running low on time. We were going to talk about the East-West Shrine Game and the Senior Bowl.
Let's save that for next week.
Yeah. And we'll start laying that out for everybody. And we'll probably mention the playoffs a little bit and all the teams that are, well, we kind of already know. We know 11 of the 12 playoff teams anyways.
Yeah.
But, or 10 of the 12 playoff teams anyways. Although 2020, the opponents have been established. Obviously, we won't talk about three in the division. We know we're playing both home and on the road. Eric tells me that we are playing the South in both the AFC and the NFC. And at home, we will face New Orleans, Tampa Bay, Houston, and Indianapolis, with Washington being one of our two, not wild card teams,
common
but the other
last place
common
opponents.
Last place teams. We'll face them at home instead of on the road, which is good for us, having only won once in Washington in the last 80 years. And on the road, they will travel to Atlanta, Carolina, Tennessee, Jacksonville, and then Arizona again.
Again.
They seem to end up playing in Arizona.
I feel like NFC
West last place counterpart.
I feel like they've played Arizona. Like
every year. They play eight
of the last 10 or something ridiculous like that. Or 9 of the last 12. It's impossible to really like look at these and say, hey, you know, what looks good, what looks bad. I like their away schedule better than I like their home schedule.
Yeah, the home schedule looks pretty difficult at this point. But yeah, like you said, we'll see. We'll see what those teams are and how the Lions complicate things themselves as time goes on.
Yeah. But it's out there. We at least know the home and away. We won't know who we play on what week until April. That's usually when they come out with the schedule for the who plays, you know, when you get your buys and week 1, week 2, all that jazz. But yeah, I mean, it's there's some good teams, there's some bad teams. That's to be expected.
And that's likely what it would be even after the reshuffling. That's probably what it'll be next year.
Yeah.
And we will do well if we are a good team, and we will do poorly if we're a bad team. And that is yet to be seen.
We got a couple more reviews in the last couple weeks.
Great.
Our review number hasn't gone up, but some written reviews have come in from Little Maua and Loyal Lion and Callie. Both wrote some nice things about us, helping us out. We were up to 256 last week. That's still where we are. But like I said, the written reviews are coming in still, so that's...
That's great.
That's fun. That gives it. All of that helps. You know what I mean? Because there's a couple podcasts ahead of us, and there's a couple podcasts that are nipping on our heels.
There's some new sharks in the water.
There's some new sharks in the water.
Always new sharks in the water.
But we're sitting there. We're not far off the lead. We're sitting at. We
want to catch those leaders.
We got some great reviews, and those are all positive. They all help us, and we appreciate all of it. And so we just continue to thank everybody. Next week, I'm going to try and come up with something a little extra special. If I can get it in place next week, I shouldn't promise next week, but because there's a lot going on in the next week with this team. But I do want to do something for our listeners, and we've had some requests from people, and I want to put something in place and try and get something going.
All right. And now I'm excited to see that because I don't even know about that. So it's great. And it's great. Let's everybody enjoy the last game against the Packers because that's the last time you'll see the Lions in uniform this season. And until next time, let's go Lions.